They said, we're shutting down your hospital because the sterilization process that you're using today no longer meets Joint Commission accreditation. Oh my God. And so what do I do first? I got to go run to my mentor who gave me this job. And I said, oh my God, Joint Commission. They just said they're going to shut down the hospital. It's not my fault. The person who was in charge of Joint Commission didn't tell me that we had to change our sterilization. I don't even know what that means. The doctors say that we're still using the right one and we should appeal, but an appeal takes 2.5 years. And he goes, time out, David. Maybe I didn't pick the right person for being president of this hospital. And I said, okay, I'll figure it out.
That was David Orbach, former executive vice president at United Health Group. And something David understands perhaps better than most is that we live in a world where we're always navigating change on one level over another. Sometimes that change is of our own making and our own desire. We want it. And other times it's thrust upon us and we enter into the change process kicking and screaming. As people, our capacity and ability to navigate change, whatever kind it may be, varies from person to person. And when facing change, our instinctive responses could be to run and hide, to blame others, as David tried to do originally, or rise to the challenge. We could feel vulnerable or empowered, or we might also feel isolation or relational connection. Understanding how you respond, how we respond to change is important, because this will determine your ability to adapt, sustain, and learn through the change process, as well as help your team navigate the inevitable changes that comes from working in any sort of role. Hello, everyone. My name is Nathan Freeberg, and you are listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, our show helping team leaders build positive team culture. Our consulting firm has spent 25 years investing in teams so that people are mentally engaged and emotionally healthy. Today on the podcast, we get to hear about how David Orbach, former executive vice president at United Health Group and several other high-level roles that we're going to get into in a minute, how he approaches this change process. David is not just any leader. He describes himself as a value-based servant leader who achieves results by leveraging the power of a strong and diverse team while relentlessly pursuing an innovative and healthy organizational culture. Now, we've had the privilege to work with some of David's teams to build this healthy culture starting back in 2010. And recently, he joined one of our Connect events in Minneapolis as a guest speaker on the topic of how to create a healthy team culture while a team or organization is going through change. Now, David personally has navigated significant changes throughout his career, from serving as a prosecutor in both Washington, D.C. and Minneapolis, to leading as an executive VP in some very large, very pressure-filled healthcare organizations, both here and as well as abroad. Now he's embarking on an exciting new journey mentoring startups and entrepreneurs. In this episode, David shares the driving force behind his passion and its role in his approach to change. He talks about attitude, adjustment, and action as it relates to change. David's varied career offers profound insights into embracing and maneuvering through change, relevant wisdom, whether you're a top-tier CEO or any other leader in any other capacity. What stands out most to me in this episode is just David's candor and vulnerability in discussing some pivotal moments in his life when he both sought out significant moments of change as well as when those significant professional setbacks of change were thrust upon him, offering a very candid look into his coping and recovering strategies. Now, a quick small note here before we dive in. So this conversation is actually an interview between Brian and David. Brian was leading this conversation. We had just a few audio hiccups on Brian's end, but don't worry. I'll step in and kind of become a narrator for a few of these parts. And thankfully, David's audio was just fine. So please enjoy as Brian Shubring engages with David Orbach, exploring the multifaceted world of change and its profound impact on team dynamics and organizational culture. Enjoy.
I am strangely excited for what's about to come. When it comes to talking with David, you have no idea where it's going to go. You know where it's going to start, but you have no idea where it's going to go. And I'm excited for a lot of reasons. What I want to invite you to right now, physically, metaphorically, just take a deep breath in transition think about how you're going to be listening today. We ended with the conversation around needs and being mindful of what your needs are sometimes makes us more attentive to what we actually need. David is a person that I have known to be tremendously gracious. He's an amazing host. He's extremely present, handsome, and wise. He's very wise. And that's what I'm going to ask you to kind of pay attention to is I believe that there's going to be several things that he says that you are going to need to hear. It's going to be as if he's talking directly to you. And so imagine yourself sitting down with coffee or on a walk around one of the city lakes with this guy and just kind of listen to the wisdom that he has to share. Our relationship goes back to 2010, and I first met David Orbach through Ann Worden, who's in the back. She created the opportunity for us to work with David and his team. I won't unpack that story except to say this. He was the chief compliance officer at UHG at the time, and Ann got us in. We worked with the team. Being a gracious host herself, she walked us into the building up to meet David. She walked us out. And then Ann stood in front of me as I was walking out of the building. And my memory is she had her hands on her hips. She looked up at me and she goes like this. If you ever want to work here again, this, how you're dressed, you have to buy a suit. I love Ann like a sister. At that moment, I love like a sister. It's like how I didn't have a suit on. And I realized that there was a uniform he had to wear to work in that building, but not with this guy. David has shaped my life, and so I'm grateful to have him here. I'm going to read the awkward bio that I was sent, and I'm going to ask Dave to introduce himself because he'll do a better job. Dave, and this is also true. I've read it several times. It's not just a made-up thing. David is a value-based servant leader, and he was successful in many of the businesses that he's been leading on three different continents. This is important. Three different continents, United Health Group, and David achieves results by leveraging the power of strong and diverse teams, relentlessly focusing on operational excellence, and recognizing that a healthy corporate culture is a sustainable competitive advantage. His core leadership strengths include financial management, strategy development, business planning, and operational education. David is also an organized and very recognized leader in governance, corporate responsibility, and healthcare compliance. How would you introduce yourself, David?
Well, I'm a father of three daughters, all of who are grown and into the world doing great things. I am married to a woman that I've been married to for over 34 years, and I am a community builder. I guess my biggest passion is building community because in my tradition, I want to leave the world a better place than when it when I came into existence. And given all that's going on in the world, that's really hard. So I think about how do I do that?
Hey, it's Nathan again. Real quick, I'm going to do this voiceover for Brian. Keep in mind, Brian is in the room speaking both to David and the participants. Brian said, one of the things you mentioned was passion, and I want to invite all of you to think about what are some of the passion areas you have in business. I know that passion for you is like a through line that has threaded itself through the different stages of your professional life. Why is passion important to you?
Because it gives me energy. It allows me to wake up in the morning. Passion isn't always where you think things are going great. But for me, passion is why I want to do what I'm doing. It's why I want to get out of bed and make a difference and help people. And that's where I gain energy. I realized that in my work, I work best with teams. And I work best with people who are smarter than me and work harder than me. And once you know that, it's like, great, how do I know who I want to work with? Because those types of people energize me.
We'll be right back.
At Leadership Vision Consulting, we have spent 23 years helping individuals explore the depth and dimension of their personal strengths and have helped hundreds of teams build positive culture. We're excited to now announce our new online membership platform that brings together the resources, community, and motivation that you need to grow your influence and build a positive team culture. Through our courses, workshops, live Q&A sessions, and more, you'll gain the skills and confidence you need to lead effectively. And with our supportive community of like-valued leaders, you'll never feel like you're doing it alone. Visit leadershipvisionconsulting.com/community to learn more.
David, what I've known about you is that energy and that passion is kind of infectious. And we've studied your leadership through the years because you're someone that is upbeat, optimistic, and positive. I know that that's rooted in passion, but when it comes to this topic of change, how do you approach change? Like, just generally, is this something that weighs you down? Is it something that buoys you up?
Well, I think there's two types of change. One that you institute and one that happens to you. I learned a long time ago that I'm not very good at status quo. Someone once offered me a job and said, all I want you to do is do exactly what's been happening the last 3 years and manage that perfectly. And I said, not a chance in, you know, because it's just not me. And so I realized that when I get to institute change, I embrace it. When it happens to me without me knowing it, I go through many of the questions we just talked about. Why me? What did I do? What's going to happen next? And then I realize none of that is worth a hill of beans because it's not going to take you forward. And so I have to quiet those words and I have to say that, yep, change is hard. We all know that change is hard, whether it's you're instituting it or it happens to you. And I say, okay, is this going to be the hard part? It's messy in the middle, you know, because then you got to figure out, okay, what am I doing? Do people like me? Am I getting the results that they wanted? Oh my gosh, will I be able to find a new job? Will it be as satisfying, fulfilling as the last one? But then I realized change is glorious for me because I really like learning and growing and developing. So people ask me like, what is an ideal opportunity for you? And it's, well, I don't know anything whatsoever. And I have a great team that I can benefit from because my skills are bringing the team together to leverage the power of that team to drive results.
Now, before I ask David to talk about the arcs of his professional career, which are important for this topic, we've had a couple of conversations before today to talk about what we're going to talk about today. There are three words that jumped out that I want to, you know, pitch out there totally unprepared. They all start with letter A. So themes that I heard from you was when it comes to the topic of navigating change was attitude, adjustment, and action. So you're speaking to a group of leaders here. If you think about those three words, attitude, adjustment, and action, why are those three important for navigating change?
Because when you think about change, your attitude is what wakes you up in the morning. And you got to realize that it's not always going to be easy. And if you change the way you think about change and you realize it's going to be natural and you've done it before, we've all had change and we're all here in this room. We've all survived it. So if you come with an attitude like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to climb out of that hole, then guess what? Your thinking drives your behaviors, which is I'm not going to be able to get out of that hole. And guess what happens? You're not out of that hole. So your attitude is key because it changes your thinking. So adjustment is key because you never know what's going to happen. And I'm big into failure. Really, like, you're big into failure? I had a boss who told me once, fail more often. And so as you'll hear in a minute, I was a prosecutor for a dozen years, traveling around the country, putting bad people in jail. And I fail more often, like they're going to be people on the street. And I realized, because he told me that if you don't fail more often, you're not going to grow further and further and faster. And so I lean into failure. So adjustment is, okay, if I fail, okay, someone tell me. And then I'm going to course correct. In fact, I tell my team at the beginning of creating the team that I'm going to fail probably 6 times a day. Now, I'm going to succeed 4. Your goal is to figure out the difference, but also to tell me, right? Because if I failed, like if you tell me right away, I can go, wow, yep, power of the team. I've learned something. Let's course correct and move forward. And so those are adjustments. Last word.
Action. You're talking a lot about it as you're going through this, but how important is it to take action no matter what the change is?
You know, if you don't move forward, you move backwards. So I think move forward. What's the worst thing that can happen? You fail. And if you tell people you fail a lot, then like, okay, that's not a big deal. So take action, move forward, drive. And that's where I get the energy because I can see results.
All right. You're getting a taste of it. I kind of wanted to give you that running start. Now we're kind of just, you know, draw back a little bit. Share some more of your story. The highlights from David's story is there are these arcs. And one of the things I've learned as a leader is that oftentimes we think that personal development and personal growth is kind of like it's steady and it's consistent. It's directionally stable over the decades. And that's not his story. As we're talking about navigating change, some of us may be thinking, I'm just starting a new era, or maybe I'm coming to the end of my era, then what happens? And there could be some fear embedded there. Leaders have fear. I know that David's had fear, but can you talk to us about the different arcs of how you arrived to where you are and some of the highlights of why that arc was important and how did you know when it was time to move on?
Great question. So yes, a lot of arcs in my career. I started out and I went to DC because I wanted to be a prosecutor. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm working for the Department of Justice. And remember, these are the days where people working for the government and specifically the Department of Justice, that was like a cool job. That was exciting. You didn't have to deal with the politics that you do today. And so I went to the Department of Justice and I thought, this is the best job. I had a couple of years at the Department of Justice, then I went to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I said, I'm going to be a lifelong prosecutor because there's nothing better than getting in front of a jury and saying, this person needs to go to jail or this person needs to pay back money to the government. And I loved it. And I thought that was going to be me.
And then, we didn't meet during that time. It was awesome.
And so I then decided, I got a call from my childhood hero's son. So Hubert Humphrey was my childhood hero, vice president of the United States, started out as mayor of Minneapolis, right where we are. And he, when he was mayor of Minneapolis, Minneapolis was the most anti-Semitic, racist city in the country. And he came out in his inauguration and he said, he's going to change things. Okay. And he did. His son, Hubert Humphrey, was the attorney general of Minnesota. I went to law school here in Minnesota. And he said, David, I want you to come back to Minnesota and work for me and do what you do in DC, but it's time to come home. So I came to work for the attorney general's office, loved it. And then I realized I needed a change. Okay. That even as much as I loved it, I wasn't growing. I wasn't learning. So I needed to do something completely different. And so I went to a line of hospitals and clinics. I didn't take a business class in college. I didn't know a P&L from a C&G. I didn't know capital costs, nothing. And I said, I'm just going to go and I'm going to work for a line of hospitals and clinics and learn because my father is a physician. He worked for Hennepin County for 50 years and I wanted to get into healthcare. And luckily had a fantastic boss at Alina. And he said, David, after a while, you need to get into hospital administration. I said, I don't even know what that means. He said, I'm going to help you, but I'm going to ask you to run one of our hospitals. And I was like, oh my God, really? And he said, yep, I want you to run one of our hospitals. So I came in and my first speech to the doctors and the nurses and the staff was, I don't know what I'm doing. And they were like, so why did you get hired? Literally, truthful story. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never run a hospital. Okay. But what I know is that you know the answers. And what I'm really good at is working with all of you to find the best answer. And then what I'll own is driving it to completion. We'll get it across the finish line. And I spent 12 years at Alina and I had a whole bunch of different jobs. But I had to think about two things. One, never worry about title and never worry about economics. Why not economics? Well, because I knew I was going to make enough money to cover my costs, but I didn't want to worry about, okay, am I constantly growing and focusing on that would detract from what was really important to me, which was growing. Same thing with title. In my career, I have gone from executive vice president to director to president. And I kept on saying, it's only I who care about the title. Because I can tell anybody I meet, they say, they don't ask you, what's your title in life? You know, at the end of your career, at the end of your life, do they put David was an executive vice president of United Health Group. No, hopefully they'll say he was a great father, a community builder, somebody who laughed a lot. And so I had to get away from defining myself by my title or by my economics. Spent 12 years at Allina learning tons, everything from how to run a hospital to supply chain management to working with unions to leveraging the power of amazing nurses. And then I got a call from United Health Group and was very passionate about healthcare. And initially, I said no to United Health Group. And everybody's like, you're crazy. I said, I knew two things about United, that they work people really hard and people leave really quickly and they burn them out. And when I said no initially, the CEO at the time said to me, why are you saying no? Like, we're giving you lots of money. We're giving you a great title. If you care about healthcare, it's the place to go. And I said, Brian, three things are important to me. And this was the actual thing I said. Three things are important to me: my family, my community, and my job. And guess what? In that order. And I don't think I can live that life at United Health Group. And so they came to me and they said, David, we will allow you to live that life. And we recognize it isn't the culture within United at this time, but we want you to come. So I went to United. I spent 12 years at United, had an amazing career there. I was the sales leader at one point in time at Optum, which is their service business. I knew nothing about sales, never been a salesperson, never sold anything. And here I am in charge of all these sales leaders. And again, I kept on thinking, power of the team, leverage them. You don't need to be the smartest in the room. In fact, if you're the smartest in the room, that's a problem. The last 4 years of United Health Group, they asked me to do international assignments. Literally, the story goes like this. I get a call from my boss, and he says, I need to see you in Boston tomorrow morning. I said, well, where are you today? He said, I'm in Minneapolis. I said, guess what? I'm in Minneapolis too. I don't like flying, okay? And I don't really like going places where I don't know why. And I said, how about I'll meet you for coffee? We'll go to lunch. I'll meet you. He says, you're not hearing me, David. I need to see you in Boston tomorrow morning. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So I go buy the ticket. The ticket is $1,400 for the day to go to Boston. Like, this is nuts. And I think there's only one reason why I'm flying to Boston, because that's the way sometimes they fire people, okay? Because then you have to be on somebody else's ground, and then you fly back, and by the time you get back, your office is cleared out, you don't have your secure. So I tell my wife, she goes, why are you going to Boston? That's nuts. And I said, well, Jill, honey, I think I'm going to be let go. And she goes, why? What'd you do? And I said, no clue whatsoever. But I went to work every day thinking that when my name's on the office door, it's a good day. Like, it's, you know, because they go through a lot of people. And I love United Health Group. And I learned a ton. Smart people, capable people, but not necessarily an organization at that time that bred loyalty. They bred, you know, people who are smart and skilled. So I get to Boston very early in the morning, and the first thing I do is I do the same thing I always do when I greet my boss. How are you? How are things going? And I even know I'm going to get fired. I'm going to still be the same person I am. How are the kids? And they tell me about the kids. And I said, okay, now you can tell me you're going to let me go. And he looks at me. And he says, why would you ever think that? I said, well, that's kind of what you do around here. He said, well, yeah, that's true. But not this time. How would you like to be the CEO of Optum London? I go, what? He goes, how'd you like to go to London and be the CEO of Optum International? I go, I've never even been to London. He goes, well, would you like to go? I said, I don't even know what they do there. I don't even know the healthcare system there. He goes, I'll tell you what, this was a Tuesday. He said, I'd like to have you in London on Thursday and come back after the weekend and tell me yes or no. I said, Thursday? He wants me to take my wife too, obviously, because we got to find an apartment. I said, we got three young kids. There's no way. He goes, David, talk to your wife. So I fly back to, I get out of the meeting and I said to my wife, I got some good news and bad news. And she says, what's the bad news? You're fired. I said, no, that's not the bad news. The good news is they've offered me a job to be the CEO of the business in London. She goes, what's the bad news? We got to get there on Thursday. She's got a job. We got three kids. Not a chance. So I call my boss back and I say, okay, I need one more week just to get things in order. Go there the next week and find an apartment. And all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, we are in London and I'm working in that business. Did that for 2 years. Coming back as a two-year expat assignment, coming back from London, loving the job. Talk about change. One of the things that they asked me to do was change the business from losing money to making money. But also, we were doing things in London that we don't do here. Like, we had a dermatology practice there nationwide. We were doing wellness services in London, really cool and interesting stuff. But we weren't good there, and we didn't do it here. And so we changed the entire strategy of the business. Again, leveraging people who are really smart. What could we do in London that we didn't, you know, that we could benefit the NHS? On my way back from my expat assignment, I get a call from my boss, and he said, we need you in Brazil. I said, Brazil? Do they speak English there? He said, no, Portuguese. Can you go there for a month and just look at how the business is doing? And I said, I'm like flying back from London. He goes, what? They have planes from London to Brazil. So my wife goes back to Minneapolis. I go to Brazil. I spend a month there. And, you know, like United, I put this nice report together about these are the strengths, the SWOT analysis, you know, these are the weaknesses. Not that I learned SWOT in business, but I looked it up on Google, like, how would I write a good analysis of the business? And I give it back. And guess what? They said, we'd like you to go there and live there for 2 years. And I said, Brazil, really? My wife was less interested in Brazil than in London, but we went together and had an amazing experience. COVID hits. This is a long career arc. So COVID hits, and they bring back all their expats, and I come back, and I'm now leading Brazil on Zoom. And as Linda said, like, I'm not a Zoom person. First of all, I don't speak Portuguese that well, so I need a translator. We have hospitals. We have insurance companies. I need a translator all the time. I'm really good at connecting with people. And one of the things I learned was I needed to hire my replacement a year early. That's what I learned in the London space. So luckily, I had hired my replacement. And I'm working with him, who is a native Portuguese speaker. And I go to United Health Group and I say, I think I'm done. And they're like, what? I said, you know, I've had a good run here at United. And at that point in time, I realized I had spent 12 years at United, 12 years at Allina, and 12 years as a prosecutor, each time thinking that this was going to be my permanent job, and each time thinking, wow, I could do this forever. And when I said that I'm done, I had no clue what I was going to do. Not at all. And that's when I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm getting a little scared here. But I realized throughout my career, when I felt that scaredness, when I felt that energy, it was time for personal growth. Even though I didn't know, I thought to myself, I love plants. So I was going to go work at Bachmann's. I just love flowers. I thought this would be good enough. Like welcoming people, then they come into, you know, and they say, will you put together a bouquet of flowers? I'd say, that's perfect. Like that's like a result you can live with. People leave and are happy with. So I thought about that. My wife said, you'll love it for a week. Think about what you want to do first. And I started a small company called Bold Pursuits, helping small and medium-sized companies pursue bold objectives. In the beginning, they were just words. Like, what does that mean? Like, are you an operations, strategy, funding? And I said, I don't know. I'm going to figure out who comes to me. And in the last 2 years, I've been working with entrepreneurs in my fourth arc because I know nothing about entrepreneurs. I don't feel like an entrepreneur, but I am learning from them. I am working with them. And I say one thing to each entrepreneur. I will work with you as long as I'm adding value. The minute I don't add value, we're done. They're like,
Well, don't you want like a 6-month contract or a year contract? I'm like, why would you ever want that with me? I don't have anything, I don't think, of value to give you over a year. And so we start with 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, we evaluate. And I ask them the one question, do you think there's still value I can give you? And if you say no, totally cool. Like, I've learned a lot, you learned a lot, we're growing together, go. So 3 full arcs of 12 years, 1 arc of 2 year. Long answer to a short question, but that's me.
Thank you. I know that all of us face these arcs. There are many changes that go into that. And some of the changes truly reveal something. Maybe it's one of our vulnerabilities or something that we did that wasn't quite enough. I'm going to ask David to share one more story about your all-nighter. And in this story, I think a lot of us are going to be able to resonate with the emotions of it, with the challenge of it, because we've all been there where we're facing an obstacle that we think is way too great. But then there's that initial reaction. And then you have that thoughtful response. And as we continue to grow in our careers, I know that there's a lot of us that think, do I have the experience? Do I have the relationship? Do I have what it takes for the big challenge? So what I want to ask you to share, Dave, is what about the story of the all-nighter? Share this with us. After the story's over, I may ask a follow-up, then we'll have some questions.
So it's really the biggest work failure in my life. I told you about going to Alina and having a great boss and having him teach me and mentor me about healthcare. And he said to me, okay, David, it's time that you're ready to run one of our hospitals. And I was like, oh God, that's great. I'm going to be named the president of this hospital. So I go there, even though I tell the team I don't have any expertise, we're going to have to work together. And we're actually changing the culture of the organization. We're making money. Physician engagement is the highest it's ever been. Employee engagement is through the roof because of this. We're having, you know, Monday Pancake Day, where I'm at the hospital flipping pancakes for anybody who wants to come in for free. Banana chocolate chips are my specialty. And then what's going to happen is the Joint Commission is going to come in. And the Joint Commission commissions hospitals to make sure that they're at the quality standards that you're abiding by. And we have somebody who's in charge of Joint Commission in our hospital. And I go to her and I say, are we set? And she says, yeah. I said, excellent. Joint Commission comes in. They spend 4 days. On Friday, they come and they said, we're ready to give you, as the president of the hospital, the report. And I'm thinking, she said we were set, all good. And the Joint Commission person says to me, first thing first, we're shutting down your hospital. That's exactly, oh my gosh. I was stunned. I wasn't even sure I heard it right. I said, what? They said, we're shutting down your hospital because the sterilization process that you're using today no longer meets Joint Commission accreditation. And I'm like, And she said, you have 1 week to fix it or we shut your hospital down until you can fix it. And I'm like, oh my God. And so what do I do first? I got to go run to my mentor who gave me this job. And I run to him. I said, I need to talk to you right away. And he goes, what? So I run over to the Alina Commons and I said, oh my God, Joint Commission. They just said they're going to shut down the hospital. It's not my fault. The person who was in charge of Joint Commission didn't tell me that we had to change our sterilization. I don't even know what that means. You know, we had to go from one sterilization process to steam sterilization process. We've been using it. The doctors say that we're still, you know, using the right one and we should appeal, but an appeal takes 2.5 years. And he goes, time out, David. Maybe I didn't pick the right person for being president of this hospital. I'm like, oh. I hear what he's saying. I'm blaming others. I'm complaining. I'm not giving any solution. And my favorite thing was, you know, if you blame somebody and you point at them and say it's their fault, one finger is pointing at them, but 3 fingers are pointing back at you. And I think about that a lot. And everything about the power of the team, I'm saying, well, wait a minute. That's not empowering when you're blaming people. That's not bringing people together. And I said, okay, I'll figure it out. And he said, just do it. This was Friday, now at 5 o'clock. I brought my team together. And as Brian said, it was the first all-nighter I pulled since college. And we got together and we said, how the heck can we do this? And we figured it out. We decided, okay, we were going to rent vans and bring all the surgical equipment from our hospital to a neighboring hospital. We were going to buy additional equipment that was going to come in a month. So we were going to have to talk to the physicians and slow down the blah, blah, blah. So come Monday morning at 8 o'clock, I have a PowerPoint. I go to this guy, Dick Pettengill, my mentor at that time, and I said, here's what we're going to do. 1, 2, 3, 4. And he said, go. And we did it. It wasn't easy, but sure the heck, blame didn't help. And what I realized about myself, which is probably what Brian's question is going to be, and I'll just answer it, is sometimes I don't think about what's going on at the ground. I love operating at 20,000 feet. Strategy, mission, vision, big arcs. But if you don't get off the plane and see what's on the ground, you'll never be able to land the plane. And I needed to do that. And I realized that about myself. And since then, I have leveraged that to say, okay, David, are you getting too much in this clouds and not enough on the ground?
Think about what you're hearing David say and think about what's resonating with you. I've done that same thing for myself. I think David's one of the more grounded people that I know. He knows what his passion is, as you've heard him say in the beginning. He also has these practices where he takes care of himself physically. Like there's something about just who he is as a person where I'll see him at Lifetime, like doing his thing. And there's just that part of who he is. He mentioned his family. He mentioned finances as part of something that he knows he has his handle on that. He mentioned his community. And there's something about his community that he's closely anchored to as well. And as David's talked about the different ways he's navigated change, I don't want to go unsaid that there's this really strong foundation that's beneath the rest of it that has helped me understand who he is because of the practices that he has put in place. I think that part of the challenge for us is, what do we have in place as we navigate change? What is that foundation that we're standing on? Are there some pieces missing? Have we overbuilt in some areas? I mean, like you've heard David say, there's been these great arcs there, but there's also been some gaps in there as well. And part of navigating change is understanding where we are and understanding our vulnerabilities as well. Well, David, thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, sharing our expertise in the discovery, practice, and implementation of a strengths-based approach to people, teams, and culture. We've spent 25 years building healthy teams, and we would love to work with your team. So if you have a question about anything you heard in this episode or any of the ways that we are working with teams, please reach out to us. You can send us an email to connect@leadershipvisionconsulting.com. We would also really appreciate it if you could leave us a review in iTunes or subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast, or even ask us a question or follow us on social media, all of the different ways that you can connect with us, because we have found that when you share stories, when you learn from others, then everybody grows. Everybody gets to learn more about what it takes to build a healthy team culture. Thank you again to David Orbach for being with us, not just for recording that episode, but he was there the whole day, stuck around and answered questions. There was also a Q&A at the end of this, but the audience members were not mic'd, so I just took that out of there. So if you have a question for David or for us about this change topic, we would love it. Again, drop us an email, connect@leadershipvisionconsulting.com, or reach out to us on any of our other social platforms. My name is Nathan Freeberg, and on behalf of our entire team, thanks for listening.